Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 93 of Boston's Best, brought to you by Condon Productions. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. I'm very excited about this episode as I have a passion for health and wellness when it comes to nutrition and fitness. My guest on today's podcast is Jay Gallinello. Jay is the founder of Perpetual Health. Perpetual Health was founded this year and is a nature-inspired retreat center to teach people how to live life optimally through all things natural, including natural foods, circadian rhythms, and multiple healing modalities. Their first retreat is going to be this October in New Hampshire. They'll have a nose-to-tail chef providing meals as well. Jay started out doing personal training and quickly realized he needed to educate himself more on the nutrition side of things to better serve his clientele. Jay then got his master's degree in nutrition over the past 3 years. I thought I knew a lot when it comes to nutrition. Turns out I don't know that much at all. Jay can go into detail on the biochemistry and science behind the way the food you eat processes in your body and delivers certain responses. In this episode, we talk in depth about Jay's thoughts on mainstream nutrition versus what he's been labeled as a quote-unquote alternative nutrition, which is totally fine with him if you think mainstream media promotes health-conscious foods. And be sure to listen to the end, as Jay shares the advice he'd give someone looking to start their own business, what he would tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week, we have Jay Gallinello. Jay is the founder of Perpetual Health. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Excited to have you on here and talk all about Perpetual Health and learn more about what you guys got going on over here.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time and having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's always fun when a previous guest and a personal friend, Kathleen, who was on the podcast a few months back, recommends having other people on, especially in this space. Like, I'm big into just mental and athletic overall awareness and fitness. So I just love the space in general. So I'm more interested personally, about what you guys do. So excited to get into it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a lot of call for that today. So I think a lot more people are interested maybe than they once were. So it's good timing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So before we get into Perpetual Health, give us a little background on yourself.
Well, so my background is actually kind of interesting. I'm actually a musician and an actor by trade. That was what I did my undergrad in. Yeah. It kind of all started when I moved to New York about 10 years ago, and I got an agent and I moved here as a musician and an actor, and I needed to make money because, musicians, actors.
Yeah.
It's not synonymous with steady income.
That's fair.
So I ended up getting a job as a personal trainer, and then quickly realized I couldn't get the kind of results that I wanted to for clients without understanding nutrition. Yeah. And then it's so strange. I just accidentally found something that I was as passionate about on the other side of the spectrum. So I went to the Nutritional Therapy Association for a year.
Okay.
That's where I met Kathleen. And then after that, I just finished up last month grad school. So a master's in clinical human nutrition. So that's where I sit today, and kind of a long and winding road, but here we are.
Yeah, no kidding. That's an interesting transition for sure. How long is grad school for that degree?
Almost 3 years.
Wow. A lot.
Yeah, just short of three. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny, it's people say all the time, so you study nutrition, right? So they say, well, if we're talking science, the last question's like, well, what are you, you have a master's degree in nutrition. And I always tell people, listen, I had one class on food.
Yeah.
One class on food, right?
Wow.
Everything else was biochemistry, it's the nuts and bolts, it's all that
really?
Stuff. So I was fortunate, I think, to sort of pull this program out of thin air. I had a few recommendations, but when I went into it, I didn't really know what to expect. And I couldn't have been happier at the university I chose and the curriculum. I thought, again, I didn't want a school where I spent half my time studying, you should eat more fruits and vegetables. Like, yeah. Okay, well, anybody can find that on a search engine. So yeah, this was deep in the biochemistry and kind of really, it vindicated my lack of ability in biochemistry when I was in high school. I realized that I actually could do it when I cared about it.
Yeah, no kidding. So give us a little insight as to what the classes are like. Yeah, I would have assumed it's food, right? Like I'm pretty health conscious guy. Like I'm pretty good. I eat a lot of whole organic stuff. I'm pretty on top of it with that, but I don't know, I guess, the biochemistry and the science behind it. I just eat what I believe is to be healthy. So Give us a little background on like what the classes were like.
Yeah. I mean, every semester there was a biochemistry class. Initially, it started off a little slow, but we're studying down to the level of the mitochondria. You know, so I can tell you all about how the cell creates energy through the electron transport chain complex 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and all the cofactors that are involved in, you know, transferring glucose into an energy source through the Krebs cycle. I mean, we're talking like from high school biology all the way up through, you know, through grad school biochemistry. So that was every semester we had one of those. And then we would have, you know, clinical biochemistry classes where we would learn to analyze labs. So you set in front of me a set of lab work, blood work, urinalysis, those kinds of things, plus functional labs. So we were really trained as clinicians more than, again, the one class on food. And it actually kind of bored me, to be perfectly honest.
No shit, huh? That's interesting. Yeah, that's I know nothing about any of that. Like the mitochondria, like I know nothing about any of that stuff.
Do you remember what it is from high school biology, the mitochondria?
Nope. Nope.
It's the powerhouse of the cell.
All right, there you go. The powerhouse of the cell. No, I have absolutely no idea about the details of it. I eat, like I said, I eat very whole, very organic, lot high protein foods, you know, meat, organs, like all that stuff. But as far as the science and the mitochondria and the glucose energy, I know nothing about any of that, at all. That's super interesting. So,
but you eat organ meat, so that's good.
I do. Okay. So I'll be honest. I take like supplemental organ pills.
And okay.
I haven't had the actual meat yet. I forget. You'll probably know him. I forget his first name. I think his last name is like Salvador, or he's a doctor that's like big on organ meats. He's on Instagram. I'll have to
Saladino.
Saladino, that guy.
Saladino.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's his product. It's his product. And I bought it off him. I was like, well, I'll give it a shot. So that's how I've entered into it. But now the more I follow, and it's, you know, it's social media feeds and algorithms is all interesting. The more stuff I follow like that, all I see is people eating organ meats now that I never knew it was like a thing until probably like a year ago. Like I've seen Kathleen eating it recently, which is interesting. So I've never actually eaten it, but I've had the supplements and now I kind of want to start eating it. But I just haven't up to this point.
Pate is a good way to break into that.
Pate?
Yeah. If you know, because liver is probably the most accessible and it's a superfood and you know, it's kind of amazing. And so pate is a great way to get it into the diet. And most people, I mean, I've even had my nephews unsuspectingly eat liver pate. They had no idea what it was. They just thought it was dip.
Yeah.
And they were eating it and at a holiday party. And I remember looking around like, okay.
No
so,
idea.
You know, if it has the seal of approval of a 5-year-old, you're probably going to be okay.
For sure. Okay. That's interesting. That'll be a good place to start. That'll be a good start. Before starting Perpetual Health and you go and you're getting your degree, were you still training people in between that whole process?
I was for a while, but I got to be honest, you know, New York is as competitive as it is in the acting and music market. It's just as competitive in personal training. I mean, there's a gym on every corner. Everyone's a personal trainer, you know, and I'll be honest, I wasn't that special of a personal trainer. I mean, I was applying mostly what I knew. And then, you know, I got my certificate from ISSA and all that. And it was good. But I quickly learned I didn't have a passion for that. I kind of really started to fall in love with the nutritional side and the science behind it. And I kind of just bailed on that and just went full bore into, you know, nutritional studies and thought I'll just come out on the other end and see what happens.
Got it. So let's get into Perpetual Health. What is Perpetual Health? What services do you guys provide? Like what's kind of the goal and the mission behind it?
Well, the beauty is that it's ever evolving. It started off as just, you know, myself seeing clients privately. I don't think I quite had the name before when I was personal training. It was just me. It was just Jay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hadn't really started a business, but as soon as I started, I think it actually started when I decided that I was going to jump into the social media realm, which kind of, I was forced there kicking and screaming through a lot of people who said, hey, you know, I think it was 2019. They said, hey, if you want to really start to promote a business, you're going to have to get on social media. So, you know, I developed this name and started an Instagram page with, I think, 36 you know, followers who were all people who knew me. You know, they weren't really followers. They were people who took pity on me. You know, anytime you see like the a double digit number in followers, you're like, oh, they just started. We got to go help them.
Yeah, right.
So it just sort of started to, it took on a life of its own. I said, I'm going to post every day. Now, so I was going to grad school. I had just gotten a job at a hospital in New York City. So I was actually, because I had graduated from the Nutritional Therapy Association. So I had a job at a New York City hospital where I was actually providing health coaching and nutritional advice to doctors and nurses.
Okay.
So that was super interesting. I wasn't dealing with patients. All of my clients were doctors and nurses. So that was a very eye-opening experience to see how many, or to see how much doctors and nurses needed help in that arena. Because we tend to think of them as just sort of, you know, they're just replete with information and they know all this stuff. And the scary thing is that a lot of them don't know that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So I started posting every day. So I was working at a hospital. I was still playing in a band. I was going to grad school and I found myself, it was a struggle to post every day, but I found people starting to really take to what I was writing and started to develop a voice. And I quickly realized that I was doing a combination of nutrition, but also food policy, food politics, because that, believe it or not, like everything else, there's a ton of politics that are involved in nutrition, dietary guidelines, you know, corporate influence. And I just found myself becoming more of a nutritional journalist in a lot of ways, trying to decipher information and bring it to people in a concise way as best I could. And so then it, you know, as I started talking to Kathleen, her and I both had a similar vision separately of being able to educate people. And so it's now evolved into this thing where we're hosting our first retreat at the end of 2022. And the goal is to bring like-minded people together to introduce them to concepts that, you know, as you said, right? Like all of a sudden you realize, hey, there's a bunch of people out there eating organ meats. You know, what's going on with this?
Right.
And so to bring all these people together in one place, educate, give them exposure therapy, sort of, you know, allow them to experience organ meats and fasting and all these things together. And just to kind of create some communities in the real world outside of the virtual world. That's my ultimate, is just to kind of get out of the virtual world a little bit and into the real world. I think we all need a little bit of that after the last couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. When COVID hit in particular, I started, you know, by default, the first like month, we weren't allowed to even go anywhere. I just, my wife and I would walk around the neighborhood and I just forgot how beautiful that was, just to walk around the neighborhood and just have the fresh air. That I never did it for so many years. And it just really allowed myself to slow down and appreciate all those things a little bit more. And I think through the last 2 years, I've learned to appreciate all of that stuff way more than I ever did before. And it's become a lot more of the forefront of my mind, a lot more of an interest to me than I ever realized it was ever there, you know?
That's great, man. I mean, I think one of the things we're going to learn about this when it's really in the rearview mirror is how many people, and it's complicated and it's hard, but how many people allowed this to take over their lives in a negative way, and how many people took a very unfortunate opportunity, no matter how you look at it, an unfortunate opportunity, and turned it into something positive, gaining respect for just their basic surroundings or movement or you know, socialization, all those things. So it's really cool that you say that. And I was the same way. I didn't intentionally go back to grad school for the entirety of a global pandemic. It just turned out that I started studying the human body, nutrition, and biochemistry during a global pandemic. So it was a unique experience, and I don't think I would, you know, trade it for the world. I made the best of that rough 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. And like opportunities everywhere. And then, you know, if you look at like the crash of 08, for example, the amount of businesses, and I can't think of, but there's like a handful of businesses that are household names that were born and bred out of 2008 and 2009. And I think I see the same thing happening with this. I've seen so many people start their own businesses, you know, even just from realizing that their W-2 job isn't exactly safe. And now they're going to go start to work for themselves. And a lot of people just, I think I've seen the tides turning with a lot of people that I've hung out with, and a lot of people, especially through the podcast, that have started their own business through this. So yeah, unfortunate opportunity is one way to phrase it, but there's opportunities everywhere. It's just a matter of how you perceive certain things. If you walk around with this negative mindset, everything is just the most horrible thing in the world to you. If you walk around with a positive mindset, there's opportunity everywhere. You just got to be able to see it, you know?
I totally agree. I mean, you see it all the time. And I think what's the old phrase, necessity is the mother of invention. And you just really get to see the creativity spark in people when they're sort of backed into a corner. Like you said, if your job isn't safe, what are you going to do? You're going to sit at home and, you know, have the government continue to print money, which is, you know, why we're experiencing this unfortunate inflation. And, you know, you got to do your own thing. You got to start to think, you know, what am I good at? What am I passionate about? And what kind of thing can sustain me? And that's kind of exactly what I've done. It was always in the back of my mind. I just feel like there's never going to be a better time to start something like this. And I just think, as we were talking offline, I think that, you know, people are going to need this now more than ever. And so I'm happy to help in some small way provide that for people.
Yeah. So as far as the retreat goes, have you guys, I know it's in the early stages and it's at the end of this year. Have you figured out how long the retreat's going to be? Is there like, you're going to put together some sort of a daily schedule each day, or like, you know, what's that going to look like? Any idea yet?
Yeah. So at the moment it's, well, so the dates are set. It's going to be October 6th through the 9th of 2022.
Okay.
And we're working on the daily schedule right now. I'm, you know, starting to develop the curriculum. Kathleen and I are going back and forth with some documents, trying to figure out what people want. We're also going to get a feel as we get closer to who the actual audience is, because this is going to be a very limited retreat at first. It's only going to be, I think the cap is 20 people.
Okay.
We just don't have, you know, we just don't have the space at the moment, but it's going to be a nice intimate community. We're going to figure out who's there. And I think a lot of it's going to be tailored to the people that are there. If we have a lot of sort of beginner people in the health space, you know, we're probably not going to be talking about the electron transport chain in the mitochondria. You know, there's probably not a need for that. Yeah. But, you know, I have had some practitioners reach out and they have expressed interest. And so I will certainly think of tailoring it, because I don't want people who are there to get bored, you know. So that's going to be the real challenge, is to try to figure that out. But we're going to couple it with activities, and people are going to have the opportunity to be outdoors and experience nature. And, you know, because that's the whole idea of perpetual health, is a sort of reconnecting with nature, and in a sort of in a world that we are profoundly disconnected with nature. That's the whole idea of the retreat. So we're going to tailor it. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, again, this one is on Martha's Vineyard, but eventually, eventually, you know, hopefully we're going to buy some property. I'm looking for land right now in New Hampshire to build in the mountains and in the woods. But we thought it would be fun to have something this year and give it a destination. And Martha's Vineyard, for a lot of people, I've never even been there, even though I'm from Boston. So
same, like I'm same. I've lived in Massachusetts my entire life, and I've never been to Martha's Vineyard. People think I'm like crazy, but I just somehow have never ended up there. So that's pretty cool.
A lot of New Yorkers have never been to the Statue of Liberty. So it's I think when it's in your backyard, you're just less likely to do it.
Yeah, that's fair. So possibly like a permanent like physical structure in New Hampshire. Is there like, is that like a 2023 thing, 2024 thing?
I mean, I would say it's an ASAP thing. You know, I've already gone through some of the steps for the pre-approval, and I'm looking for land right now. And if the right thing, if the right thing came across tomorrow, I would jump on it. So I would say, I would say it's going to happen as soon as possible.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool. How'd you guys come up with the name Perpetual Health?
It's actually, I wish it was a cooler story. It's actually pretty simple, but it is based on the idea of Leonardo da Vinci's perpetual motion machine, which is a machine that could run indefinitely. And I just loved the name.
Yeah.
And I think in my head, I thought, you know, we normalize a lot of chronic disease. You know, we think, I can't tell you how many clients say, well, I'm getting older, and so therefore I have XYZ, or this runs in my family. So, and we've sort of taken that attitude, and the idea of perpetual health was that maybe we should start to rethink chronic disease. Maybe it's not inevitable, and maybe we can actually have a health span, and we can have perpetual health up until the moment where, yes, eventually, since we're not immortal, our body does shut down. But the idea is to increase people's health span, not just their lifespan. It's not, in my opinion, it's not necessarily life if for the last 5 years you're hooked up to a machine, you can't leave your bed, you're getting fed through a tube. That's not life anymore. Yeah. You know, I want people to be able to engage actively in life up until, you know, their last moments, and have that perpetual health the entire way. So that's really the idea behind the name.
Yeah, no, it's a good name. I was just curious how it came about, but it makes sense. So when you started building, when you decided to finally jump on the social media train, you're posting every day. It was you posting, right? Like your own creative content that you just came up with on your own. Were you just basically posting your thoughts? Was it, you know, how do you like, for somebody that doesn't really, I'm not too good in the social media game. So for somebody that was new to it, like how have you built up the following that you've been able to up to this point? Any idea?
It is so bizarre, because I have people asking me that same question. And what, and I joke and I say all the time, I still don't even know how to use Instagram. You know, I mean, I asked a colleague of mine at the hospital one day. I vividly remember what room I was in with her. We were sitting there talking, and she was one of the ones who said, Jay, you're really going to have to get on the social media thing. I said, okay, you know what? I'm tired of hearing this. Tell me what to do. And she just said, post every day. So I took her advice literally and I said, okay, so what am I going to post every day? Well, I started just pulling things that interested me, articles in the newspaper about health and nutrition. This was before I had started grad school. Once I entered grad school, I started pulling my curriculum and the idea was to show people what it was like to go through a nutrition program in real time. You know, what is it? Yeah. Like you asked, you know, what does a nutrition program entail? Well, I thought, well, if I'm going to do it in real time, I can drag people kicking and screaming through the process and see what it's like. And that's, it sort of evolved. If I go back and look at my older posts, they're much shorter. There's only a few sentences, almost treating it like a Twitter account, you know, just like a limited amount of characters. But now I'm routinely writing in more blog form and sort of maxing out the character limit on IG to much to my frustration that it can't be longer. But yeah, and I'm so grateful for that part of it and the people that have just seemed to latch onto what I was doing because it did not have a plan. It did not have any, there was no grand plan. You know, I took a class on how to take over social media. It is truly a genuine, you know, just my thoughts on something or my scientific breakdown of a concept or something. And for some reason, people find it interesting. So I'm forever grateful for that. And for the 12,000 or so people that follow me, I think I'm still shocked to this day sometimes that it's that I actually was able to build that up from 36 to 12,000 in a matter of 2.5 years.
Yeah, like that's what I was just looking at my phone to see how many followers you had and you have almost 12,000 followers. So in 2.5 years, like that's really impressive. So I'm always just curious of how people build it up. And I read this book 2 weeks ago called The Founder Brand by Dave Gerhart. It's a phenomenal book on how to build a brand. And it basically says a lot of the stuff that you just said, like sharing your personal story as you're going through something in your life, whether you're trying to build a product, like share with people how the process of building the product goes and share with people how you're learning about the nutrition and the, you know, all the clinical trials that you're doing. And it's just, that's it. And people find that more engaging because it's personalized. It's you writing it. There's not just some generic person that's, you know, doing the copy for you. It was really interesting. I thought it was a really good book and you're kind of doing that without realizing you did it.
It was so organic. I think that's probably what it is. I think people, you know, and I also try to respond to every single comment and DM, even to this day. Wow. And there are some times where, you know, I'll be up late at night doing it, but I feel an obligation to the people who have taken the time. And some of them, I remember their names from, you know, they're like some of my earliest followers. And I feel some relationship with them, even though I've never even seen them. Some of them don't even have a profile picture or the profile picture is just some inanimate object. But yet I still have an emotional connection to the name because they chose to spend at least 5 minutes of their day reading something that I've written. And I find that to be important. And so, I've just been as genuine as I can on there. And whether people agree or not, it is me. And it's really something that I've enjoyed over the past 2.5 years.
Yeah. Especially with, you said, people spending 5 minutes a day. It doesn't sound like a lot of time, but in the social media world, like everyone is just scrolling, that the attention span's not even 5 seconds, I don't think. So if you're getting people to read what you're writing, like those people are genuinely engaged. So it's very much an organic growth that you've got going on, which is pretty impressive to see. It's awesome.
And I'm hoping that, you know, I've always said I'm going to give everything away for free, especially on social media. And that the few times that I want to, you know, inevitably my goal is never to be rich. I just want to be able to do every day what I want to do and be able to honestly affect people's lives. And so the few times that I've tried to, you know, that I've tried to monetize this population of people who now trust me, I'm very careful. So I've turned down quite a few opportunities to represent products or brands and people that have approached me because I'm not going to do that to the people that have, you know, entrusted me. So there have been a few that I have done, but it's only through careful consideration. And also if I use the product myself, you should see, I wish I could show you, but my kitchen sometimes looks like a pharmacy because people will send me things and I'll try them genuinely. And if I don't think they're worth it, I'm just not going to do it. And so if I tell somebody about something, 99.9% of the time is because I've either tried it or I truly have vetted it and understand and believe in it. I won't just say, because there's a paycheck involved that, you should go and try this. You know, I just refuse to do that.
Wow. That's awesome. Good for you. That's awesome, man. It's pretty cool to see how you've grown it so organically too. With everything you guys do, I imagine there's gotta be some myths or misconceptions about either what it is Perpetual Health does or just nutrition in general. What are some of the common misconceptions that you would hear?
Well, I think the biggest one for people is, there's so many, I think, I think the dietary guidelines are one of the biggest places to start. Now, that's with people who are relatively uninitiated. There was just an article in Vice published just, I want to say a couple of days ago, and I just got to read it last night. And it's shocking still today how journalists don't do their due diligence when writing an article. And they were sort of bashing, they call it the alternative health space, to which I would say, that's fine. I'm actually very happy to be considered the alternative health space because the mainstream health space has provided the United States population with rising rates of obesity, diabetes, dementia, all these things. So if you want an alternative to that, I'm happy to be labeled alternative to that. Yeah. And I think it's just to dispel some of the myths that all of the dietary advice that you've been told is grounded and rooted and based in science. Yeah. And some of it is, but a lot of it, people would be shocked at the politics that get played and into some of those recommendations. And so I have to usually tell people several times, it just takes them a while to suspend that disbelief at first. They just have to kind of come in with a blank slate. And that's my only ask of people. Listen, whatever you think coming in, that's fine. And probably, if I'm doing my job correctly, you will leave an interaction with me questioning me. And I hope you do, because I hope you apply that same questioning to everything across the board. Right. And in that sense, you'll find the truth eventually if you just, continually question. So dispelling the myths of general dietary guidelines are one of the biggest things I'm trying to do, because if you can't start by changing your nutrition, there's a good chance that you're never going to find true health, because in my opinion, nutrition is at the base of the health pyramid. And you can't really get around that. You can't outrun a bad diet is the phrase.
No. Nutrition is so important. It's like, it's funny when you go around, like when you go grocery shopping, you just see certain things written on certain products and you just know, like, Cheerios, like, it's good for your heart and health. It's like all the sugar that's in there. And it's like, give me a break. Like it's good for your cholesterol, but like, okay, sure. Maybe there's one study that you did where like it improves your cholesterol by like 0.5%, but never mind like the 30 grams of sugar that they throw in there. Like it's ridiculous to me. And like my wife and I have a 5-month-old daughter. Right. And I guess around 6 months, maybe they start eating somewhat like real food, right? Maybe, I don't know, what rice pudding or whatever it might be, right? So anyways, somebody was like, oh, you should give them this. And I read it, and like one of the first ingredients on there in this item, I don't remember what it is, was canola oil. And I'm like, canola oil is not good for me. I'm not going to go give it to my like 5-month-old daughter as one of the first things she eats. Like, why is this edible for infants and children at such a young age? Like, it makes no sense to me. And like, I was like, I got very like overwhelmed and I got like really upset about it. And my wife's like, just calm down. I'm like, why are people feeding their kids this when they're like not even a year old? This isn't good for anybody. Never mind like such a young child. And he's just, that's like, I can go on and on because it gets me all worked up, but it just bothered me so much when I saw that.
But I think it should.
Yeah.
I hear the same thing. I mean, these are our children. These are the next generation. Yeah. And if we're not fostering them with nutritious foods, how do we expect them in critical times of development, neurologically, especially fats? I cannot explain or express to people how important it is to choose healthy fats, even over sugar, because at least sugar, which is a molecule of fructose, and so it's just, that's what the sugar molecule is. The body knows what to do with those independently. Now, certainly there's a threshold and you can go over that threshold, and that's what leads to a lot of other issues. But at least in reasonable amounts, the body knows what to do with that. These industrial seed oils like canola oil and safflower oil and soybean oil, these are not natural products. Right. The processes that go into making them. And the scary part about those fats is that they incorporate into cell membranes. So, when you're talking about a young child who's developing, one of the worst things you can give them is an industrial seed oil. And that was part of this argument that this paper was making, or this article in Vice was making, that it's overblown nutritional pseudoscience. And I can very clearly illustrate the biochemical mechanisms by which it is not pseudoscience. But again, reporters don't do their due diligence. We have normalized just mainstream advice. If a health authority says so, it must be true. It cannot be questioned. Where have we heard that before?
Oh yeah.
So, now we just have to, unpack those things. And again, going back to what we want to do with perpetual health, that is what the whole idea is to unpack that. Not everybody's going to get it, but I want everyone to at least be exposed to the information so that they have a chance, because otherwise you're going to be feeding your 5-month-old canola oil and you're going to be thinking that it's heart healthy because that's what the label says.
Yep. Yep. I could not agree more. The whole thing gets me very overworked just thinking about it. And like now, like I know that I'm going to be looking at, like, I know what I can handle. I know I'll indulge. I love ice cream. Like I just love mint chocolate, but once in a while. But like my daughter now, I know she is going to, I'm going to be that guy that watches literally everything that she eats for the first few years. And it's probably going to be a little too much, but it's just, you know, you just care so much and you just don't want anything like canola oil. You don't want them that in their body at such a young age when they can't handle it and they're developing, right? So it's just, it's a whole thing. And then I have like my lunch every single day because I'm very much just a creature habit. It's easy to just make the same thing for me and it's genuinely delicious. I mean, I have 3 ounces of organic bison, 3 ounces of organic chicken, and 3 ounces, if I think it's like 4 ounces of organic ground beef every single day with like a slice of uncured bacon. Like that's my lunch every single day. And it's so good. And people are like, why? Like all that protein, like that's so bad for you. All that meat is so bad for you and your cholesterol. I'm just like, there's so many things you don't know. And it's like, you're judging me because I'm eating like delicious organic meat. And like, I just watched you, how it was like a blueberry muffin. Like, you know, it's just, I don't know. This, it bothers me so much.
You know, it's funny. I was climbing Mount Katahdin in Maine. Oh boy, 2017, I think.
Yeah.
And there was a continental breakfast in the little like, you know, hotel that I was staying at. They had a muffin there. I won't name the brand. It's a well-known brand. Yeah. And you know, in a little plastic wrap. And I kind of joked, you know, I said, I'm gonna take this little guy home, you know, for breakfast. And I never ate it, but then it dawned on me. I said, you know, I wonder what would happen if I just unwrapped this muffin and just left it sitting out and just see, you know, just see what, I mean, cause it had probably 400 ingredients on the back. all two of which were natural, you know? Yeah. And so this started an experiment, that I call the Great Otis Experiment. And that muffin, I can't go over there right now. It's actually sitting on the windowsill behind me, that is still unwrapped,
still
open, sitting there. It's been in a New York City apartment now for 5 years. Doesn't have an ounce of, I have to dust it, you know, every once in a while, but it has no mold. It has nothing. Nothing has. So, you know, if something, if bacteria won't touch it, and this is a New York City apartment, I think two years ago, I had a mouse in the house and I was trying to get rid of him in a humane way because I just, you know, it's just who I am. Even the mouse never touched the muffin that was unwrapped sitting on the windowsill. It's been sitting in the sun in the summer, sitting through the winters, and it is still, if I showed it to you and you smelled it, you'd still think, oh, I could eat that.
Wow.
It's incredible. So, you know, real food, like you said, like bison, like, you know, ground beef, chicken, these are foods that we have eaten forever. In fact, there is a lot of evidence that shows this is how we developed as humans. So we have normalized fake industrial processed foods. Because the nutritional dogma has told us that meat causes cancer or meat is bad for you. These are the things that we must unravel. Yeah. Because again, if the goal is to be healthy, the mainstream dietary advice has not brought us health. So it's a time to try something different, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, what's the number? Like 63% of America is overweight or something like that. Like it's just, I mean, you follow mainstream anything, you're probably going in the wrong direction, but
it's,
I digress.
It's a real problem. No.
Yeah. Like that muffin reminded me, like there's this ongoing thing I'll see like once a year on social media where this guy bought like a quarter pounder or something like that. And it's just like, but it's been like a decade at this point. And it still like looks exactly how he bought it a decade ago. And it's just wild. Mm-hmm. Like when you think about that, like, that's not meat. Like, I don't care what you say. Like this, that's not meat.
There's a Twinkie experiment that's very similar that I think is even older than that. And I think it was like 49 years or something. It's just, we're, you know, again, we're out of control. And again, I think it all comes down to what we allow to be normal. But people will look at you cross-eyed all day long if you eat eggs for breakfast every day, but they don't think it's any problem to have a Pop-Tart every day. Somehow that has become in the sort of nutritional dogma that has become normal. And it is just so far from normal. And we need to return to something that resembles what our biology needs and wants instead of what our marketing departments tell us we need.
Yeah, I agree. So it's funny you just mentioned eggs. I have 3 eggs every single day for breakfast. And it wasn't until probably like a month ago on Kathleen's Instagram, she showed the difference between a free-range egg and a cage-free egg and the coloring of the yolk and how much brighter it was with the free-range egg. And I said, wow. Like I always got cage-free, but it never occurred to me just because it's cage-free doesn't mean they're not like right up against each other. Like it never really like occurred to me. And ever since that post, probably like a month ago, I've bought free range eggs and they're delicious. And I know, like, you just see the brightness and the difference in the yolk. It's like, holy shit, like, never would have seen them side by side any other time before, except for that photo. So it was really like enlightening just to see that post that she made.
It's so great. I get them from a local farm, and you can see even in different times of year, because the chickens are eating, you know, they're foraging for different things. So the yolk changes over time. And, you know, the commercial eggs generally, you know, while I understand I would still rather have somebody eat a commercial egg than other commercial foods, but you can definitely see the difference. And that's the process. The beauty of the process is that you learn one piece of advice and then you start to incorporate that and you feel better and you think, okay, how can I fine tune this a little more? And that's the whole process. It's just fine tuning according to your life, your financial situation, everything. I can find healthy food. When I moved to New York, I was making at my first job, I was making $8.50 an hour, $8.50 an hour in New York City. And I was still not eating fast food. So it can be done. You can find meat on sale. You can absolutely do it. Yeah. I don't want people to think that they're being legislated out because eating healthy is expensive. It is. Right. It might be more expensive, but I always tell people, what about the long run? The medications and the things that you're going to have to pay for down the road. It's like, pay the farmer now or pay the pharmacy later.
Exactly. Yep. I love that. Pay the farm now or pay the pharmacy later. I like that. So Jay, like, outside of, like, I can go on about this stuff all day. Like, I have a passion for like health and nutrition and fitness and all that, but outside of Perpetual Health, what are some of the hobbies that you do for fun? You still, you know, play music and acting or anything like that?
So a lot of that took a backseat because of grad school. So I've been a complete shut-in for, you know, close to 3 years now. But I mean, most of my, you know, playing in a band is probably one of my favorite things to do. And I would say, other than that, it's just being out in nature. So taking hikes or competing in, you know, like I did the Fenway Park Spartan race a few years ago. That was a blast. So yeah, just anything outdoors, anything that requires nature or anything artistic. So playing in a band, I haven't been able to do many auditions over the past 3 years, but hoping to get back into all of that. That's pretty much where I'm almost paralyzed with options now that school is done. It took up such a large percentage of my time. I still find myself sitting there at night thinking, oh, I should probably be studying something and realizing, oh, I actually don't have to do that right now.
Seriously. That's gotta be a good feeling. Is it safe to assume you play the guitar with the guitar behind you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
Yep. At Berkeley, my principal instrument was voice. So I'm a singer, a guitar player, and a piano player.
Okay. Nice. Very nice, man. So Jay, as we wrap up the podcast, I always ask every guest the same three questions at the end, just trying to get their perspective on, you know, certain things. So the first question I would love to hear about from you is, now that you've started Perpetual Health, what would be the first piece of advice you would give someone who's looking to start their own business?
I think the best piece of advice is, whatever it is, make sure that it's something that you're passionate about, because you are going to spend, to be successful, you're going to spend an extraordinary amount of time doing, you know? So if it's just a business because you don't feel like working for a boss, that might not be enough to make you successful. Just find whatever it is, because chances are there are people that are going to be just as passionate about it as you are. So that would be the best piece of advice I could give, is just find something that you could digest 24/7 and then do so.
Yep. I love it. Something that you get passionate about that you're not going to get sick of when you're like, because if you're running your own business, you're going to be invested 24/7. So it's got to be
every aspect of it, right?
Yeah. Every aspect. So it's got to be something that you're not going to get sick of. You know, obviously you'll have days where you're just annoyed that you got to do something or whatever, but deep down you're genuinely passionate about whatever that business is. I think it's a good piece of advice. The second one is, if you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell him?
Don't get sidetracked. The path to what I consider success is variable and, again, long and winding. So I think about the way I started things, and I could never have imagined kind of where I am now. I nutrition, science, Instagram. I mean, these were things that, of course Instagram wasn't around, but even just that, you know, the whole aspect of what I do now, I couldn't even have envisioned it, but all those steps in life kind of led me here. So I would say just keep your eye on the prize, which again is just following your passion. It goes back to your first question. I've been one of those people that, regardless of what is being asked of me or what is expected of me, I just continue to follow my passion. So it started at Berkeley. It ended up, you know, going back to school, you know, later on in life. It doesn't matter. Just follow whatever your passion is, and it will lead you to where you're supposed to be. And I think that it sounds simplistic, but it's hard to do because we get wrapped up in life. But yeah, I would just say, try to stay on target and minimize distractions.
Love it. No, I think that's good. Especially this day and age with social media, distractions are everywhere. Right. So it's hard to stay focused. So last question, Jay, everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how would you define success?
Well, I don't want to be cheesy because I have a low tolerance for cheese, but what I'll say is, I don't mean that nutritionally. I would say that. I'm sorry. What was the question?
How do you define success? You got success, lost, right? In your cheese.
I started thinking about cheese, and I haven't eaten yet. So, I mean, for me, success is just doing what I love to do every day. And again, I know it sounds cheesy, but I truly love hearing from clients who have changed their lives, people who have regained a sort of youthful feeling, have regained some of their mobility, regained control over their health. So to me, success has nothing to do with money. It's almost completely decoupled from money. It is all about waking up every day, not having to worry about money on my end, doing what I love to do, and watching the fact that I can see the impact I'm having in the world in a physical way, that I can look out there and I can see people who have said, you know, man, I can do this and that with my grandkids now. And I didn't think I was going to be able to do that. So it's very simple, but it affects me in a profound way to be able to help be a small piece of improving other people's lives. And so if I can do that and pay my bills, I can't think of anything that would make me happier.
That's awesome, man. That's a powerful response. I like that answer a lot. Jay, thanks very much for coming on Boston's Best to chat about perpetual health, man. I appreciate the time.
Oh, Mark, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best Podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.